everyone, and welcome back to the Research Talks podcast here from Stockbox with Alan Green and Dan Flynn. So an interesting week on the markets. Bitcoin, of course, pulling back quite a lot, as Dan has been licking his wounds on that front. But as we were saying before we recorded, it's just part of the normal cycle, I think. And it still reminds you that it takes no prisoners. It's probably got a little bit further to go before maybe it finds the bottom. But if you're a believer, or you just want part of a speculative portfolio, then it's a chance to pick some up a little bit cheaper. The only market where people do not buy more when the sale signs are on. So maybe it's an opportunity. But so that was obviously what stood up this week. I think the markets had a generally good week, I think, apart from was it Friday afternoon when the US opened? Yeah. Well, but London was less affected by that, I think, wasn't it?
Well, you had some good job numbers in the US on Friday, 172,000 jobs. So the market there is showing resilience in spite of the uncertainty over Iran. But I think there's a bit of a mystery about Donald Trump, because he's not been seen since May the 27th. He's just his whole career has just been built on dominating the news cycle. Although he's gone dark, his Truth Social account's been sort of pushing stuff. But he's kind of disappeared from view. So maybe he's just taking a holiday, or maybe there's something more sinister afoot.
I didn't know that, Alan. Okay.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Usually he can't do anything but be seen, can he? So it's
His modus operandi.
Indeed. Indeed. But I've seen Stockbox have done quite a few interviews this week, and I think the general interest is definitely picking up. Since years ago when we started the company, people are engaging a lot more. So I think the eyes are definitely coming on to a lot of the stocks that we cover, particularly in the mining space and critical mineral resources. Dan, who you interviewed, Charlie Long, this week, that also got some sort of good interaction there, good feedback. So give us a story on that then, because of course you had the latest update from him.
Yeah, so I spoke to, like you say, Charlie this week, and the main thing for me that stood out was the valuation disconnect. And this is something I've spoken about a few times on here this year, but it was good to hear it from the man himself, because this is now a company trading around a 7.5 million market cap after falling around 25% year to date. But operationally, the stories just kept moving forward. And not like in a vague exploration sense. CMR is rapidly advancing an initial mine at its Agadir Malil copper silver project, which is in Morocco. It has a clear sequence of catalysts over the next few months. The project itself looks much bigger than that first mine, and there's further acquisition opportunities coming through as well. So it feels like the market is still treating this like a small early stage explorer, and one that's not delivering as well with the share price action. But what Charlie was making really clear is that the company is trying to build something more practical than that. It's not just drilling forever, hoping one day to produce a huge theoretical resource. It's drilling, modeling, feasibility work, moving the initial mine plan forward at the same time. And that's the key difference. So the latest update from Agadir Malil gave us more drilling results, and that included 9.7 meters at 0.74% copper and 4.46 grams per ton silver from just over 25 meters. And there were higher grade sections within that. So again, we're talking about shallow copper silver mineralization here. And this is where one of the points Charlie made in my interview I thought was really useful. He basically said investors shouldn't just look at the headline grade and thickness in isolation, which you might think, he would say that. But what matters is how it fits in the mining equation. I mean, you need to ask, how shallow is it? How much does it cost to mine? How much does it cost to process? And what margin do you make per ton? Because shallow material can really change the economics. If your mineralization is close to the surface, you don't need to spend huge amounts going underground, building declines, sinking shafts, constantly chasing deeper. And as we all know, that can reduce upfront capital costs, sustaining capital, by a huge amount. So a moderate grade shallow copper project could be very attractive if the cost base is right. And Charlie's argument, which he was making in that interview, is that Agadir Malil really has that kind of profile. So CMR has now processed the drilling to date into an internal geological and block model prepared by its senior geologist in Morocco. The company says the model is sufficient, subject to economic studies, for development of the initial mine. So it's not yet a maiden JRC resource. That's targeted for Q3. So we need to be a little bit careful. But it does show the company is no longer just collecting drill holes. It's turning the drilling into a model. And that's a very different stage of the story. And Charlie also made a good point about how CMR is trying to do things differently. I mean, rather than waiting for a resource and starting a feasibility study, then thinking about permits, then a mine plan, and so on, CMR is running these work streams in parallel, so not sequentially. And the reason that is that the company wants to get into production as soon as practical, first on a relatively small initial scale, and then grow from there if the drilling continues to support it. I think that's a much more practical approach than endless exploration, and it gives investors a really clear set of milestones to watch. Like I said, that maiden resource estimate is targeted for Q3, September. Mine planning is then in October and November, and a DFS is targeted for December. So those timelines still need to be delivered, and delays can happen, but there is a visible near-term pathway. This isn't just more drilling at some point, it's a defined development sequence. So moving on from that initial mine, perhaps most importantly, there's also the scale point. And I think this is where the market is probably missing something. That initial mine isn't the whole project. It's just the starting point. CMR says that less than 5% of the sedimentary target has been drilled so far. And that's a big statement, because if the company can already see enough in the internal model to support an initial mine from just a small part of the target area, a really small part, just 5%, then the wider project looks to be much larger than what the market is currently giving it credit for. Charlie talks about finding thicker areas of mineralization and how quickly tonnage can build if you find near surface zones with meaningful thickness over a decent footprint. So that's the real upside here. The first mine gives the company a development route, but the broader project gives it that expansion potential. And then on top of that, there's also an acquisition angle. Charlie referenced an additional property the company expects to close shortly. So I don't want to get too excited about that, because we need to see the details about the transaction when it completes and it's reported. But the direction of travel is clear. I mean, the company isn't just developing one small pit here like it might appear from first glance. It's really trying to build a broader Moroccan platform using its experience in the country to give it an advantage. So we bring this back to the valuation. For 7.5 million, investors are getting a company, you know, with that initial mine being advanced quickly and the pipeline of catalysts over the rest of the year that comes with. But on top of that, it gets a project that appears to have much broader scale potential and additional acquisition upside in the background. Could say that none of that removes the risk. This is still a small cap mining development story. But that is where that disconnect comes in. The share price is down this year, but the company has kept delivering against the plan. Mm. And again, another thing Charlie said in the interview is that he isn't about changing strategy just to please short-term traders or trying to create a quick burst of news flow just so people can jump in and out of the stock. The company's taking a more of a, like a private approach, I guess, where it's trying to really build properly. And that does require a bit of patience. But it does also mean that as the different pieces start to come together, the market may have to look at the company very differently, and that valuation gap could start to close. So that's the key point for me. This isn't just an explorer talking about optionality. It's trying to turn this shallow copper mineralization first into initial mine and then into something much bigger with those other projects around it. And if those pieces continue to fall into place, then I think there's a good argument that CMR could re-rate significantly from 7.5 million. I'm a holder personally, so I hope so. And I think as we move beyond this period where we're only seeing drill results and start to see some of those big milestones being ticked off, then the market might actually start to properly look at this and appreciate what is targeted.
Good, excellent. Yeah, I know you. You're a holder there, Dan, and it's good to hear your take on that. So it's yeah, not a big area, right? And you say 5%, and it's already looking like it could be a feasible mine. So I think Charlie just goes about. He's quite a transparent guy, I think. I don't, you know, very just straight talking, honest, transparent CEO. Just going about doing what they should do, building a mine.
I think there's an element where he's. I guess a lot of explorers do just go through those ticking those boxes for that one project, and he's doing it a bit differently, where that initial mine might look small. So if you just focus on that, you might think, oh, okay, that's good that that's coming, but then what? But like you just said, 5% of the project, and that's what that initial mine's based on. This is a longer term play. Which doesn't suit everyone, obviously, because people like to make money quickly. But, you know, I do think this is one that is being undervalued.
Okay, thank you. Well, from one prospect to another then. So, Alan, Blencow Resources, of course, much more advanced, but also still got some potential, I think, right? They've been nicely building away over a year. We've talked about them for a long time, haven't we? But now they're really, really getting going. So give us the update on BRES.
They really are, yes. I mean, Blencow, as you say, Mark, we've worked with them since the company. It was a reversal into an African company that owned the Iron Cross resource back about 6-7 years ago, I think. Worked with them all the way through, and the Iron Cross graphite project is really a tier one project. It's quite an exceptional asset. In regard to Blencow at the moment, the company's currently got a market cap of just over 40 million. Trading 8.3p, has traded as high as 12.2p on the year and as low as 3. But the company recently raised a chunk of money. It's well funded and has plenty of institutional investors supporting the company too. So the Iron Cross graphite project is based in Uganda. It's about 6 kilometers east from the town of Orem, and it is a huge area. Some 520,000 hectares, and there's good road access and good access to power and water. Now, back in 2012, when the previous company owned the assets, there was a JORC resource completed, an estimated 2.2 to 3 billion tons of graphite near to the surface. And as soon as the team got on the ground there, the near to the surface was no exaggeration. Literally, there were flakes of graphite sticking out of the ground that could be almost dug up with a spade. So several high quality or high potential areas were identified. Those were worked on. Those were primarily Camp Lodes, and then the Northern Syncline asset, and more recently the Iron asset and the Beehive Syncline. So the company has worked to develop the product. It's sent graphite taken from the area for sampling. It's undergone end product testing, that's both for purified products, battery anodes and so on, and also the higher value large flake products to sell into the traditional markets as well. So it really does have something for everyone. And most recently this year, the company's graphite, the Iron Cross graphite, was used by American Energy Technologies as a component in a rocket testing program, which was undertaken in California in the USA. Initial test firing was successfully completed, and the early observations, the team were encouraged by the performance of the graphite in high temperature applications. So that's a really, really solid endorsement. So as the year has progressed, I mentioned the later assets, the Beehive and the Iron Syncline. The company announced a maiden JORC mineral resource for the Beehive asset, and this is just one of those four. So you've got Camp Lode, which is 3.9 million tons at 7.5 15% total graphite content. Northern Syncline is 31 million tons at 5.6% total graphite content. Iron is 8.1 million tons, 7.3% graphite. And Beehive is 21.3 million tons at 6.5% total graphite content. So there's a total of 64.3 million tons at an average of 6% total graphite content. And the astonishing thing is that this is like the total areas covered are about 2.5 to 3% of the total area that takes into account the Orion Cross graphite project. So they've already established a very long life of mine with the existing graphite in place, but there is so much more to go. You know, the team are really just starting the exploration program now. So on the back of those numbers, the team at Blencow have been working on an updated DFS, and that was published a few weeks ago. So the net present value is increased by 15% from just over $1 billion to $1.25 billion. The net free cash over the life of mine was increased by 120% from $2 billion to $4.4 billion. This increased driven by increased volumes and prices for high-grade purified graphite products. And also the average annual EBITDA numbers were jumped by 45% too, from $230 million to $333 million. So that's stronger cash generation that can be reinvested into developing the other assets there. Most recently, Oak Securities published a note after the DFS. And of course, this was published by Ryan Long. The shares, as I say, currently trading at just 8.3p. They have increased their target price by some 6% to from 33 pence per share to 35.7p per share. So it's way, way ahead of where it is currently. And I think based on the scale and the potential of the remaining Orion Cross graphite project that is as yet. It's had a cursory glance over, if you like. They've looked over it, but obviously they're just working with those four assets at the moment. But the upside here is astonishing. It really is. So the DFS was published, the upgrade DFS, and looked at the phase one and phase two production models. Phase one is based on a production level of 20,000 tons per annum at 97% TGC, total graphite content, up to 3% per annum of spheronized graphite produced at an in-country beneficiation facility. That's something else the team are working on developing. And that's a capex of $45 million. Phase two sees that model increasing to 70,000 tons per annum of 97% TGC and 10,000 tons per annum of the spheronized and purified graphite for battery anode and so on. So that's just the initial phase of production. But all this is pushing forward. The team are looking to develop the production facility and with the asset now valued where it is, and the potential on the rest of the Orion Cross graphite project, the future is looking extremely bright.
And it's only a 40 million market cap company at the moment.
It's a fraction of where it should be. I mean, Oak Securities obviously have increased their target, or Ryan Long has run the slide all over it. But it should be much, much higher. And they've all of the testing's been done. You know, the quality of the graphite is proven beyond doubt. And you've got the rest of this huge asset just sitting there waiting to be developed. To be developed, along with the four existing assets with the JORC resource.
Yeah. What do you think's holding it back, Alan? With all of that, those sort of key metrics that you've just given us, free cash flow of 4.4 billion. I mean, something got to be overcome before the market sort of recognizes the value here.
I think it's we see this with so many companies that are at the point where that they're nearly in a position where they can start to generate the capex to to build the production facility and the mine. So they're very close to getting there. But of course, I think the question mark is this: well, where's the money going to come from? And Mike Ralston and Cameron Pearce have already been discussing. You know, there are many investment organizations that would be very keen to work with the team to help develop that asset. And of course, until those are signed off and in place, and let's not forget too, of course, the USDFC, the Development Finance Corporation, also provided $5 million of investment into these assets too. So they've had all that money along with it too. So really, it should be a clear path. But I think until that path to production is mapped out and absolutely set in stone, I think that's probably going to sort of weigh on the valuation a bit until that time. But the thing is, for existing holders, you know, it's going to come, and when it comes, we are going to see a big jump in value.
Mm. Just waiting for that reassurance. Okay, thank you, Alan. So it looks like all the signs are there for Glencoe. Of course, when that certainty is there, then, you know, it's massively de-risked and the opportunity is gone, right? So
That's it. So while it's at this level, it's still really undervalued, and there's a huge opportunity. And I'm a shareholder, have been for years, and any dip in the price, I just top up because it's
okay. Good. Okay, well, back to you then, Dan. So, MedPal. I know you speak to the CEO fairly regularly.
Yeah, it's looking like an interesting one at the moment. Again, like CMR, the share price has been hit pretty hard, but the business itself seems to be moving forward nicely. So the stock's currently at around 2.7p, down from highs of around 12p last year, and down roughly 46% year to date when I last looked. And that gives the company a market cap of around 16.5 million. But after that heavy fall, the share price does look like it may have started to find a base, and it has been moving up again over the past few days. So I guess the question now is whether the market's just become too cautious, just as MedPal is starting to show some real operational progress. So the business has two main parts. The first is the MedPal app. This is the original core of the company. It aggregates data from more than 100 wearables and health apps, so your Apple Health, Fitbit, Garmin, etc., and turns that into a unified health profile for the user. The idea is that the app is the entry point to a wider digital health platform, which I'll get into in a little bit. So it's not just about tracking your health data. The aim is to use AI to help guide users towards the right kind of health support, and then connect that to the second part of MedPal's business, which is clinical and pharmacy services. And this is where the revenue is now coming from today. So MedPal has moved quickly from being a pre-revenue digital health business to owning pharmacy infrastructure and generating pretty meaningful sales. In its recent interim results, the company reported £1.6 million of revenue for the 6 months to the end of Feb. And given it was very much in ramp-up mode over that period, this is pretty significant. The company also reported gross profit of around $369,000. And by March 2026, the pharmacy operations were running at an annualized revenue run rate of more than £5 million, with gross margins of over 34%. That's important because it suggests, you know, this isn't just revenue growth for the sake of it. There's a margin profile here as dispensing volumes scale, and scaling is very much the intention here, as we'll get into. So the latest operational update from the company showed further progress. In May, MedPal dispensed more than 42,250 prescription items, which is its best month since launch. It's now dispensed in total more than 250,000 prescription items since launch. And based on that May volume, the pharmacy operations, again, remain on an annualized turnover run rate of more than £5 million. So the pharmacy side is clearly building momentum. MedPal now has two registered dispensing hubs, one in Swaffham, one in Runcorn. And the Runcorn acquisition could be particularly important. The company says historical NHS data for that site showed nearly a million prescription items dispensed in 2024, which is equivalent to annualized turnover of roughly 9.9 million, just under 10 million at current NHS average item values. MedPal is now trying to reactivate that customer base under its ownership, like it's already done at Swaffham. So if it can do that successfully, then the business, the pharmacy business, could scale massively from here. And there's also the GLP-1 opportunity. So MedPal has established a private GLP-1 weight loss clinic and has direct supply relationships with Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk, which gives it access to Mounjaro and the weight loss pill Wegovy. And that's actually a really important point because Wegovy is expected to be approved for use in the UK within days. And it's generating a lot of hype. There's a lot of articles about it out at the moment. So to have direct access to that could be a pretty major coup. I mean, I read that a poll recently found that twice as many Britons would rather take a weight loss pill than a jab, which is obviously the prevailing method of these projects at the moment. So yeah, we'll see what happens there. But regardless, weight loss is a major market. So it's also competitive, so we shouldn't overstate it, but it is another channel that fits neatly into the wider MedPal platform. And that kind of brings us to the bigger strategy, which the company calls the MedPal Health OS. So in simple terms, the app collects and organizes the user's health data. AI triage helps guide the user to the right care pathway. And if medication is needed, MedPal can fulfill prescriptions for its own automated pharmacy infrastructure. So the long-term idea seems to be a closed-loop digital health and pharmacy platform. You know, the app brings users in, the clinical layer helps direct care, and then the pharmacy infrastructure, which is already up and running, fulfills the prescription with automation. If that model works, then MedPal could become more valuable than either a standalone app or a standalone pharmacy business. So we should probably mention funding. At the period end in the results, cash was just over 4,000, which isn't a lot, but that number is pretty misleading on its own because the company, as it points out, has since raised a further 4 million gross through placing subscriptions, a retail offer, and fee shares. So the near-term funding position looks better than the period-end cash figure suggests. That said, it is still a growth business. It's investing in the pharmacy, build-out, the clinical staffing, marketing, and the tech platform. So I think what investors will want to see is the company keep scaling revenue, holding or ideally improving margins and moving towards break even to reduce its reliance on raising cash so it can be internally funded. On that note, management has said it expects pharmacy level EBITDA break even at a combined run rate of 80,000 items per month. And that's expected in Q4 this year. So I think that's a pretty key milestone to watch out for. If MedPal can keep growing dispensing volumes and reactivate Runcorn properly, build the GLP-1 clinic and show that the app is becoming part of the customer journey rather than just being a sort of separate product, then today's 16.5 million valuation really could start to look pretty interesting, especially with the share price already so far below last year's highs. So we've seen how high it can go and it could go higher. I don't think this is one to be blindly bullish on. The company still has to prove it can turn fast operational growth into profitable and sustainable growth. And it has to show that the health OS it's talking about is more than just a good strategic story. But the direction of travel is certainly encouraging. Revenue has gone from zero to meaningful levels. Dispensing volumes are rising along with margins. And that pharmacy platform really appears to have headroom. And that app also gives it a broader digital health angle if it can connect everything together properly. And that seems to be valuable in today's increasingly digital world in the healthcare sector. So if those pieces keep moving in the right direction, then MedPal could be one of those sort of kind of beaten up growth stories where the market starts to take another look. It's still early, but with the share price showing signs of life again and the business continuing to scale, it's definitely worth keeping on the radar. I'm certainly going to be keeping an eye out for the next figures as they come out, just to show evidence of everything continuing to move towards break even and profitability.
And that Wegovy thing, that obviously people know about that. So what was MedPal's involvement with them, Dan?
they have this GLP-1 weight loss clinic, which has a direct relationship for supply with with the, I think it's Novo Nordisk, which is the Scandinavian company that manufactures the pill.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a kind of first mover advantage, I guess, in as the product becomes available here in the
UK. Like a distributor.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay, good. Well, thank you, Dan. It's definitely a new take on like health, isn't it? We know they have the pharma thing, as you've talked about, prescription.
Yeah. I've covered them before a while back. And like I said at the time, then I know it's nice when you see stories that relate to your own life. And I do feel like everyone's a bit fed up with the whole process of getting prescriptions, especially if you get repeat prescriptions. If you could just do it on an app like MoPal offering, it is something that could really strike a chord, I think, with a lot of people. And if they can integrate it all into this singular ecosystem, then yeah, I think they could be onto a winner. But you know, tech stories, they a lot of the time they sound good, don't they? It's all in the delivery, and we are starting to see the company really delivering on it. But it's got a lot further to go yet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that's where the risk reward comes in, doesn't it?
Indeed. Mm. Excellent. Well, thank you. So, Alan, let's finish off with you then with Truefin.
Truefin. AIM listed company. Truefin is, it's had a really good year, actually. If you're a chartist, the chart is well worth a look. It's just steady growth throughout the year. When we spoke last year about it, the shares are trading at a low of 89p. They're currently trading at 134p, and they've been as high on the year as 147p, and with good reason too. So the company is listed on AIM, currently got a market cap now of 126 million, and it's the holding company for a group of technology businesses. Oxygen Finance, which has been part of Truefin since the IPO, and Oxygen Finance is a leading provider of early payment programs and specialists in payment control insights in the UK. Satago, which is a fintech invoice financing organization helping SMEs manage cash flow, and then a game console platform called PlayStack, which really is the jewel in the crown, as I'll explain shortly. But PlayStack has reinvented games publishing. They use in-house developers to create original IP and technology, and also the team identify games and help to monetize them in the public marketplace. They've released some 45 to 50 games over the past 6 to 7 years. So had a really strong run in that regard. The company provided an insight into last year on the 18th of March when it published full year results to the end of December. Gross revenues grew 20% to 66 million. Profit margin increased to 46% from 45% last year. EBITDA jumped by 66% to 12.6 million, with cash and cash equivalents at the end of the year of 12.4 million. And of course, no debt, which is always attractive when you're looking at a company like this. So, in terms of the operational highlights, Satago really hasn't had a good year. Its revenues declined by 50% to 1.2 million. But as you can see already, that's really a fraction of the overall turnover of the group. And the reason for that is it lost its contract with a tier one bank in July 24. Oxygen Finance revenues there grew to 9.1 million from 7.7 million last year. Big jump in EBITDA too. Some good contract wins there and solid progress. But PlayStack is, again, driving the growth here. It grew revenue by more than 24% to 55 million, with EBITDA up 20% to 13.5 million. And a series of operational highlights. PlayStack was named UK Interactive Entertainment Publisher of the Year, and it expects to release a further 8 titles this year, including Mortal Shell 2 and Rakoin, if that's your bag. Oxygen's revenue is still growing strong. So it's clear to see where the growth drivers are. And indeed, Chief Exec James Vandenberg said that despite the challenges, after the Middle East war and the volatility in energy prices, the company is well placed. It continues to scale profitably and is expected to remain highly cash generative in the years ahead. So that's great. So that was in March, solid progress. Then on 21st of May, a couple of weeks ago, the bombshell dropped. And this is something, when I've spoken about Trufin beforehand, I've always looked at this company and thought, well, you've got this games company that's generating pots of money, it's profitable, it's growing rapidly. Surely you spin that off at some point. And that's exactly what they've done. They've conditionally agreed to sell its 84.5% interest, or Trufin has agreed to sell its 84.5% interest in Playstack to Vantage Co. Limited. Vantage Co. is an indirect wholly owned subsidiary of Integrated Media Company in the Cayman Islands. So that's part of the Integrated Media Company group. And what it means is it'll bring 125 million. It applies an enterprise value of two place tag of 125 million. It means Trufin will receive 112 million net of transactions in cash. 1.5 million will be held back due to potential tax liabilities in Playstack, but that obviously is going to change Trufin completely. So once that's gone, that's great. So you've bought the cash in. It's a massive milestone for the company. They're going to continue to grow the company. But I guess the question mark is now, or the big question is now, what is next for Trufin? Because they have bought this cash into the company. What else will they invest in? So it's quite an intriguing juncture, this company. And I think I've been watching it for some time, looking at Playstack. I'm actually surprised they didn't get more for Playstack, if I'm honest, because I think, we've seen so many really strong performances from British gaming companies. Team 17, of course, I've spoken about them in the past. But I think, that great, they've got the money. What are they going to do next? Do they have sort of plans to make a big investment into a new sector? Who knows? But I think it's intriguing. It's at an intriguing juncture. And I guess a lot of investors might sit on their hands and wait until those plans are announced. But nonetheless, it's at an interesting inflection point.
Good. Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Alan and Dan, for your time today talking about those different companies. Do have good weekends, and we'll see what next week brings. Take care.
Thanks, guys. Have a good weekend. Thanks,
if you enjoyed this interview, then give us a thumbs up, a like, or a retweet. Subscribe to us on YouTube or follow us on Twitter, and hit that notification bell to be the first to know when we release new content. There's loads of great content on our website too, across all our programs at stockboxmedia.com. Thank you for watching.